I've said that 100 times. We have no plans of fighting against Europe. But if Europe wants to fight and they start this fight, then we are ready right now. There is no doubt about this. But the only question is, if Europe starts the war, unleashes this war, because that's not Ukraine. With Ukraine, we use some surgical means. We are trying to be really careful. Because you understand why. This is not a war in the direct sense of the word. And Europe, all of a sudden, wants to start a war. And if it does start a war, then very rapidly there might be a situation where we have no one to negotiate with.
This is my video update on this Wednesday afternoon, December the 3rd, coming to you from Athens, Greece. Let's talk about some news. And let's start things off with the big news for the day, which is the meeting that took place yesterday between Russia and the United States in Moscow. Putin, Dmitriev, Ushakov meeting with Witkoff and Kushner. And Witkoff and Kushner, they brought with them Trump's peace plan, which is a 27-point peace plan and four documents accompanying the 27-point peace plan. So it's no longer 28 points. It's not 19 points or 22 points. It is now 27 points with four documents. And we know this because Ushakov, after the meeting, which lasted for 5 hours, so a very long meeting in the Kremlin, Ushakov spoke to reporters and he took a few questions from reporters, and he revealed that Witkoff and Kushner, they brought with them Trump's peace plan, 27 points, four documents. And he said that the four documents were basically the rewrites and the amendments and discussions that the U.S. Has been having with the Ukrainians. And that was what was contained in these four documents, at least according to Ushakov. But Ushakov told reporters that the talks were constructive and very useful. So there appears to be a positive vibe between the two delegations. Ushakov said that they did not discuss the details of these 27 points and the documents. They didn't get into the details of the plan. But what was discussed, according to Ushakov, was the essence. The essence of the plan and the document that was brought to Russia. They discussed the essence. One of the key issues, a reporter asked Ushakov about one of the key issues, which was territory, if they resolved any of the territory issues. Ushakov said that this is indeed one of the key points for Russia, and this was not resolved. But Ushakov did say that there were parts of the plan where Russia could agree with the United States. They could work with the United States, but he said that there are other parts of the plan that Russia has issues with. But all in all, he basically said, look, we can work with the U.S., and there's a lot of work that needs to take place. We're not going to have a meeting, he said, between Trump and Putin anytime soon. There's still a lot of work that needs to happen between the United States and Russia. But a reporter asked him if we're closer to a resolution or further away, and Ushakov said, "No, we're definitely closer to some sort of a resolution than further away from a resolution." He was asked about Europe and if Europe is going to play a role in any of this. And Ushakov said, forget Europe. No need to include Europe in any of this. And then he also revealed that Witkoff was not going to stop in Europe on his way back from Moscow, and he's going to go straight to the United States and speak with Trump. Witkoff was supposed to. The reports were that he was supposed to meet with the Green Goblin after the meeting in Moscow concluded, and he was going to brief the Green Goblin on what was discussed. But Ushakov said that the U.S. promised the Russians that they're going to go straight to the United States. There's no need to brief Alensky. What for? Why do you need to consult with Alensky? All Alensky is going to do, if Witkoff were to meet with Alensky somewhere in Europe, all he would do was try to sabotage whatever progress was made. He would probably try to bring along some European leaders like Macron or Alexander Stubb or 008, and they would try to sabotage whatever progress Witkoff and Kushner made in Moscow. And Ushakov also said that both sides agreed to keep everything that was discussed secret. So Russia and the United States, according to Ushakov, are not going to talk about any of the details as far as what was discussed during the meetings. Russia's gonna adhere to this. I have no doubt about it, that they're going to keep everything very quiet. Witkoff and Kushner are probably going to keep everything quiet, but what most likely is going to happen on the collective West U.S. side of things is that the media is going to start to run stories citing diplomats or officials, European diplomats familiar with the matter, who have spoken to Witkoff's cousin's brother-in-law, and they said that what was discussed in Moscow was X, Y, and Z, right? They're going to start to leak all kinds of stuff and all kinds of nonsense. That would be my guess, the collectivist media, and they're going to try to sabotage the talks and the progress that was made during these talks in Moscow. That would be my guess. So Kushner, Witkoff, and Dmitriev, I don't think Ushakov was with them, before the meeting started in the Kremlin, they were given a tour of Moscow's city center. So they walked around Moscow, and they were at the Bolshoi, and then they went to Red Square. And Dmitriev, he wore a jacket, which said on the left side of the jacket, it said in Russian, "Russia is not a country that fears anything." That was written in Russian, right? It's right here. So I imagine that, or right here, yeah, right here, right here. The double-headed eagle, I believe, was on the left, and the "Russia doesn't fear anything" was on the right. Anyway, not important, but I imagine that Kushner and Witkoff probably asked Dmitriev, "Hey, what does that say on your jacket?" And I imagine Dmitriev said, "Russia is not a country that fears anything. That's what it says," right? So he was wearing that as he was showing them around Moscow city center. Basically, he was walking around the areas that I did videos from, right? In front of the Bolshoi, and then he walked across the street to Red Square. So everywhere that I was doing the videos from, the city center of Moscow, was basically the walk and talk that Dmitriev had with Kushner and Witkoff. And they got along. They get along. Very different than the Ukrainians, right? During the meeting in Florida, you could tell that Witkoff and Kushner, but more Witkoff, he doesn't like the Ukrainian delegation. He was not having a good time sitting there with Umerov and all of these guys in Florida. But in Moscow, it was a much different vibe, you could tell. It was a much more positive vibe. Ushakov also said that they discussed the business potential between the two countries. And they talked about that and how there's a lot of potential for a lot of big business to take place between Russia and the United States. So he mentioned that as well. But you got to imagine that Witkoff and Kushner walking around Moscow were probably saying to one another, man, those sanctions, they're really not working, are they? Yeah, they're not working, Steve. Nope, Jared, those sanctions are not working at all. Not the European sanctions, not the U.S. sanctions, not Trump's recent big sanctions. None of it is working. Yeah, you got to imagine that was the impression that they got walking around the city center of Moscow. So at the same time that that the U.S. delegation was in Moscow at the Kremlin, the Chinese foreign minister, Wang Yi, and his delegation was also in Moscow, and they were meeting with Lavrov and the Russian foreign ministry. So interesting timing there. Russia meeting with China and Putin and his team meeting with the United States. I wonder if they managed to talk to one another, all three countries, if they managed to take an hour or two to speak with each other. So Putin, before going to the meeting with Witkoff and Kushner, he spoke to the media, and he got questions from the media about the attacks on the tankers, the two tankers in the Black Sea, and the other attack on the tanker that happened off the coast of Africa. And he was asked about these attacks on the tankers and attacks on the Russian shadow fleet. And so he answered a question about that. And then he also answered a question about Europe and also about Europe, NATO, Europe and the negotiations that are taking place between the United States and Russia. And then he was asked a question about Europe, NATO constantly talking about war with Russia. And Mr. Dragoni, the dragon, the NATO commander, Dragoni, the dragon, talking about, preemptive strikes on Russia. And Putin's response was pretty classic Putin. Let's just put it that way. It was pretty based, man. Yeah, straightforward to the point. That was Putin's response to the questions that he got from reporters. So on the issue of the Black Sea attacking tankers in the Black Sea, and also a tanker not in the Black Sea, the dirty war, as Alexander correctly calls it, Putin said that this is piracy. He said straight up, attacking these tankers is piracy. And then he also said that, look, if Ukraine continues to attack tankers in the Black Sea, and these could be Russian tankers, but these could also be, and they are, third-party countries' ships. If you attack these ships in the Black Sea, well, then maybe Russia is going to have to just take the Black Sea. They're going to have to go after the Ukrainian ports, he said, and then eventually we're just going to have to control the Black Sea so that we can prevent attacks on ships and tankers in the Black Sea. A reference to Odessa, right? That's what I took from that statement. So he said that about the tankers, the tanker attacks. I'm trying to see if I have a quote here. Russia could cut off Ukraine from the sea if Kiev continues attacks on Russian ships, said Russian leader Vladimir Putin. As a response to attacks on tankers in the Black Sea, Russia will expand strikes on Ukrainian ports and ships that dock there. Big mistake. Big mistake from the collective West to go after the tankers. There's a thousand tankers that are working with Russian energy, right? Russian oil, etc. A thousand plus tankers And these boneheads decide that it's going to be a good idea to try and take out two or three of these tankers. Two of them in Turkey's exclusive economic zone. So you've pissed off Turkey and Erdogan as well, right? And they thought this was going to be some good idea. This was going to do what? To scare off Russia? To send a message to Russia and to Putin? Nope. It did the exact opposite. So that was his answer there. And on the negotiations and Europe's role, Putin basically confirmed what Ushakov told reporters after the meeting with Witkoff and Kushner. He said, look, Europe, they took themselves out of the game. They have no role to play in any of these negotiations. And why should they play any role in these negotiations? Because Europe, they have no diplomatic plan. They have no plan for negotiations or peace. All they do is talk about war, Putin said. That's all they do is talk about war. So what is there to discuss with the Europeans? And then on the issue of preemptive strikes and Europe attacking Russia, Putin said, look, we have, as Russia, we've said it 1,000 times, we have no plans whatsoever to invade Europe or to go after Europe, start a conflict with Europe. But if Europe does decide to attack Russia, some sort of a preemptive strike, then Putin said that Russia is ready. He said, bring it on. If you guys want to go after Russia and strike at Russia, he said that we are ready and that it's not going to be like Ukraine, was Putin's point. It's not going to be some sort of SMO. He said that what's happening in the conflict with Ukraine, he said, it's very surgical. He used that word. It's very surgical. And the conflict with Europe basically would result, he said, in Russia not having anyone to talk to or to negotiate with when it was all said and done, when it was all over. Basically, Putin saying that we would obliterate Europe and there would be no one left to talk to. So don't even think about it. That was Putin's message to all of the talk from Europeans about hitting Russia preemptively. We are not planning to fight Europe. I've said this 100 times already, but if Europe suddenly decides it wants to fight us and starts it, we are ready right now. So Vucic actually said something very similar to what Putin said with regards to some sort of a preemptive strike from NATO. Vucic said in a statement yesterday that Russia is stacking wins. He said the Russian army is stacking wins. He said it's impossible to ignore that Russia is winning the conflict. He said every European leader understands by now that Ukraine has lost and Russia has won. He said that these wins are freaking out the collective West and NATO officials, European officials. And he also warned against a European preemptive strike against Russia. Vucic said, if preemptive strikes are delivered on Russia, I would not be surprised to see Russia retaliate much tougher than it has been doing in Ukraine until now, including the use of tactical nuclear warheads or even something more powerful, Vucic said, adding that he thinks Moscow has so far held back from going to such extremes. Don't forget that Moscow has been showing certain restraint until now because they look upon the Ukrainians as their friends and brothers, he noted. Basically, it's Vucic telling the Europeans, don't go there. Trust me, he's saying, trust me. I know Russia. I know Putin. Don't go there. What you're seeing in Ukraine is not what we're going to get if we start a conflict with Russia. It's going to be much, much worse. So that's Vucic's warning to Europe to calm down and stop all of this preemptive strike nonsense. And there are people in Europe, no doubt about it. There are some crazy freaking people in the collective West, not only in Europe, in the collective West, that actually believe that they can get into a conflict with Russia and somehow come out on top. There are people in the collective West that actually believe they could have a nuclear war with Russia and actually survive and come out on top. There are crazy people in Europe who actually believe this, and in the collective West and in the United States who actually believe this. So let's talk about corruption in Europe, corruption in the European Union. Who is more corrupt, Ukraine or the European Union? Because we have the Ukraine corruption scandal that broke a couple of days ago. And now we have a corruption scandal that is breaking out in the European Union. No, it has nothing to do with Ursula's text messages to Birla. Nope, none of that. It's not Qatargate. Remember Qatargate with the European Union? Nope, it's not that either. This has to do with the former EU top diplomat, the EU top diplomat before Jungle Josep Borrell, Federica Mogherini from Italy. And she was arrested, taken into custody by the Belgian police, along with two other EU officials. And they claim, the Belgian police, they claim that Mogherini and these other two officials are part of some type of misuse of EU funds. Basically, what's my understanding of things, what's going on, according to the reports and the statements from the Belgian police, is that Mogherini and these other EU officials, what they had going on is that there was an academy that was being built and that was going to be constructed in Belgium. And this is part of the College of Europe. The College of Europe is where the cool kids go to prepare to enter a life of service for the European Union, right? Students go to the College of Europe, and then from the College of Europe, when they're done with that school, they then have a life of service with the European Union. And Mogherini, after her tenure as a top diplomat in Europe, she was appointed as the head of this academy, the College of Europe, and they were going to build another academy, a new academy, or an extension to the current school, and they were giving. They were giving favorable preferential contracts to certain companies and individuals in the construction process of this new academy. That's my understanding of what's going on. And so Euractiv, they broke this story, and the title of their article is "Welcome to the Jungle: Raids, Arrests, and a Crisis of EU Credibility." So it's Mogherini and two other EU officials. One of them is actually the other EU official who allegedly took part in this corruption. One second, is also pretty high up in the EU chain of command. What's this guy's name? Let's see. Former EU foreign policy chief, Mogherini has been taken into custody by Belgian police, AFP reports. Police have arrested three people suspected of procurement fraud, corruption, and criminal conflict of interest, the European Public Prosecutor's Office said. Later, the newspaper L'Echo cited sources in Belgium law enforcement agencies reported that one of those detained was the EU's former Secretary General, Stefano Sanino. That's the guy who served as second in command in European diplomatic service under Josep Borrell. Those detained are accused of rigging tenders for EU-funded construction projects. Police noted that the alleged offenses occurred during the period when Josep Borrell headed the diplomatic service. So there you go. All of this was going down as Jungle Josep was the top diplomat in the EU, according to reports. Let's see what else is your active saying. European prosecutors suspect the two colluded to steer a public contract for a new diplomatic academy to the College of Europe, where Mogherini is rector. The project is funded by the EU's Foreign Service, which Mogherini used to run. It is also where Sanino held a senior post when the decision on where to base the academy was made. The whole thing is bad. The whole thing is bad, right? It's being funded by the EU's foreign office, foreign service office, this new academy where Mogherini was the head of, and then she became the rector of this new academy, and it's just all bad. It's all one bad revolving door, right? I think she's been released, and the investigation will continue. Will something come out of this investigation? Probably not. The timing is interesting. As the European Union is going after Belgium, we have the Belgian police going after EU officials. Maybe it's not connected to the EU pressuring Belgium to release the Russian frozen assets to the Green Goblin. But maybe this is connected. I don't know. It could be. It could be. Welcome to the jungle, says your active. Welcome to the jungle. Raids, arrests, and a crisis of EU credibility. Yes, welcome to the jungle. Jungle Josep. Josep Borrell's jungle. Remember when Josep Borrell said that what we have in Europe is a garden? It's a beautiful, orderly garden that just works, he said. The garden of Europe is the best. It just works. And the rest of the world, Josep said, is a jungle. It's all a jungle. A jungle of corruption, right? It's just a jungle. Nothing works. Ah, jungle Josep Borrell. He is eating those words, isn't he? He is eating those words, man. Ukraine corruption, EU corruption. Oh, boy. So with Belgium, the European Commission, desperate to get their hands on the $140 billion in Russian frozen assets. Boy, are they desperate to get their hands on the $140 billion. I've never seen anything like it. I've never seen anything like it. These politicians, these globalists, they are so desperate to get their hands on the $140 billion. The U.S., even the U.S., according to Politico, even the United States of America, according to Politico, told the Europeans, look, calm down, calm down. If we get to a deal with Russia, as we're negotiating with Russia, we're going to have to give this money back. So just calm down, take a chill pill, relax. Even the U.S. told the Europeans this. But nope, the Europeans insist on getting their hands on the $140 billion. So their latest offer to Belgium, they're putting a lot of pressure on Belgium. Boy, are they putting a lot of pressure on Belgium. So the latest scheme that they've come up with to try and influence Belgium to just give over the $140 billion is that And they're going to present all of this in a week, like officially present all of this in about a week. But we have the reporting from the media outlets. The EU, the Commission, they're telling Belgium, look, one of your fears with the 140 billion, giving it to the Green Goblin, is that if we have every 6 months, we have to vote on the sanctions to roll over the sanctions. And one of your fears is that we're going to have a vote on the sanctions and Hungary or Slovakia are going to veto the rolling over of the sanctions. And if the sanctions are not rolled over against Russia, then we have to give back the Russian frozen assets, right? So if you don't get a unanimous vote in Europe to roll over the sanctions, then that money has to be given back. And so one of Belgium's fears, and this is not the main fear, to be quite honest, but one of their fears was that one of these days when this vote takes place, Hungary or Slovakia is going to say, okay, enough of these sanctions. We're done. These sanctions are over. There's already a negotiated deal between the United States and Russia, or Russia has already won the conflict. Enough of this. So let's get rid of the sanctions. And that would mean that the 140 billion has to go back to Russia. And so Belgium would be on the hook, right? And so what they've done is they've gone into the articles of the European Union. The lawyers, they've dug into the articles and they found a clause which they said that they can interpret as meaning that if you have an urgent situation, if the EU is confronted with a very, very urgent existential situation, then they can bypass unanimous voting and shift to majority voting. And so what the EU is telling Belgium, that in the case of voting for the sanctions, they're going to consider it existential and it's not going to need a unanimous vote. So Hungary's vote is not going to matter. Slovakia's vote is not going to matter. And to roll over the sanctions, all that's going to be needed is a simple majority vote. And therefore, you don't have the risk of the sanctions not being continued. And therefore, you don't have the risk of having to return the 140 billion to Russia. So there you go, Belgium. Give the money over to the Green Goblin. Come on, Belgium. Give me the money. Belgium said no. Yeah, Belgium said nice try. It's a concern. It's a concern for Belgium, but the main concern for Belgium is going to be the meltdown of their economy. It's going to be the meltdown of Euroclear, the meltdown of their financial institutions, the meltdown of the Belgium economy. That's their main concern. The lawsuits, the illegality, the fact that Russia would take Euroclear to court, and they would win, and they would win big, and no other EU member states want to share the risk. They don't want to provide any type of guarantees to Belgium, and that's the number one concern for Belgium. So Belgium said, "Good, okay, but not enough, not enough. We're not going to give over the Russian frozen assets." So there you go. That's an update on that. Rubio was on Hannity, Fox News' Hannity, and he was asked why the U.S. is not speaking with Europeans. With Kaya Kallas was basically what Rubio was getting at with this statement to Hannity, and basically Rubio said that there are people who behave irrationally, those who believe that we should only talk to Ukraine and not talk to Russia at all. It is impossible to end the war between Russia and Ukraine without talking to Russia. And Rubio said that there's only one country that is positioned to be the neutral mediator. That's what he said. He didn't use those exact words, but he said there's only one country that's positioned, one president and one country that's positioned to speak to both sides, and that is the United States. And so the Europeans and Kaya Kallas, because Rubio doesn't take any meetings with Kaya Kallas. He doesn't waste his time on Kaya Kallas. Give him credit for that. At least he's smart enough to realize that he's not going to waste his time speaking to Stunning and Brave. But he basically said, look, all she wants from us is to speak to to Alensky and to not deal with Russia. And we have to deal with Russia, is what Rubio told Hannity. We have to deal with Russia because we're the neutral mediator, right? We're the neutral mediator, and we have to speak to both sides. But the truth of the matter is that the United States needs to speak to Russia because Russia's winning the conflict. Russia's winning the conflict. Russia has won the conflict. And the United States has to speak to Russia to figure a way out of this mess. And they're going to blame it all on Europe. That's what's going to happen. That's why vassals are so useful, right? Vassals will do what you tell them to do, right? But when things go bad, you can also pin the blame on the vassals, and the vassals will accept it. So, you know, it's important to have vassals. I think that's a good life lesson. Try to get as many vassals as you can in life, because not only can you tell them to do things that are not in their best interests, but you can tell them do this and do that, and they'll do it. But if things go badly, then you can blame the vassals, right? So that's basically Rubio's message to Hannity. He also said that as he's negotiating with Russia in Project Ukraine, Rubio also said that the goal is to come to a solution, but to preserve, what's up, my friend? To preserve Ukraine, he said, to preserve its sovereignty. He's talking about a freeze in this exchange with Hannity. Preserve Ukraine, preserve its sovereignty. And then he said that, who knows, in 10 years, Ukraine's economy could be bigger than Russia's. In 10 years, NATO's economic output inside Ukraine could surpass Russia's entire GDP. Talk about some delusion and some cope. Yeah, that's never going to happen. Anyway, that was Rubio on Hannity. And Trump was meeting with Rubio and Hegseth in the White House. And they were taking questions from reporters. And they were asked about Venezuela. And Trump said that there are going to be, most likely, there will be land attacks. So he said that. Attacks by sea on boats, but soon we will be most probably seeing attacks on land. So he's hinting at some sort of a ground operation in Venezuela. And Trump also talked about going after other countries that are categorized as narco-terrorist regimes, right? And he specifically mentioned Colombia. Trump actually mentioned Colombia. He said Colombia produces coke. They have coke manufacturing plants. Then they sell us their coke. We really value this, he said. I don't understand why he said that. He was being sarcastic, I guess. Anyone who does this and sells it to our country is attacked. That is what Trump said about Colombia. Interesting statement from Trump there. Very worrying statement from Trump, singling out Colombia. Colombia did not like it, by the way. Colombia's leader said that any attack on Colombia obviously would be an act of war. That's what Colombia's leader said. So I think that is everything for today. And I could probably start my Clown World segment. I think it's going to rain very soon. Before I get to Clown World, remember to like this video, remember to share this video, and also subscribe to this channel. We are very, very close to 250,000 subscribers on YouTube. It has taken a long time. I have probably walked 250,000 steps. I've definitely walked 250,000 steps, no doubt about it. But if you like this video, then tick that like button. And when you tick that like button, say, I like it a lot. I like it. I like it a lot. Trump kind of looked like he was asleep during this White House meeting, it seemed. He was annoyed. There was a point during the meeting when Rubio was talking about Trump getting the Nobel Peace Prize. Actually, Trump talked about getting the Nobel Peace Prize and was very annoyed at the fact that he solved 8 wars and he's going on 9 wars and he still hasn't gotten the Nobel Peace Prize. And then Rubio was talking up Trump, saying that this man should get the Nobel Peace Prize. All he does is resolve conflicts, and he's the peace president. And Trump looked annoyed at the fact that he wasn't getting the recognition as the peace president that he thinks he deserves. But he also looked like he was kind of dozing off as well. I don't know. Anyway, let's do some clown worlds. Russia has captured Pokrovsk, and there was a video circulating of the Russian military in the center of Pokrovsk holding the Russian flag. Ukraine decided to AI the video, to doctor the video, and show Ukraine soldiers holding the Ukraine flag in the center of Pokrovsk. And they passed the video off as proof that Russia has not captured Pokrovsk, and actually Ukraine continues to hold Pokrovsk. Everyone realized that this was a fake video, and people did not like it. Even pro-Ukraine media, independent media, and Telegram channels were very upset at the fake video and the doctoring of the video. They were so upset that they actually got the Ukraine military, to delete the doctored video. That's clown world number one. And do I have another clown world? Pete Hegseth gave an interview to Stephen Miller's wife, I believe, is who this person is, who has a podcast. And she has access to all of Trump's inner circle, and that's who she interviews in her podcast. I believe it is Stephen Miller's wife. And she asked Pete Hegseth, the secretary for the Department of War, if he could have dinner with anybody, who would it be? And Pete Hegseth said he would have steaks with Trump, Putin, and Zelensky. It will be a dinner for peace. Come on. That's your answer, Pete Hegseth. If you could have dinner with any world leaders, anybody, you would choose Zelensky? Really? Oh, man. Anyway, that's the video. I think I will end it there. TheDuran.locals.com. We are on X and Telegram and Rumble. Go to the Duran shop, pick up some merch. And I will see everybody tomorrow. Take care.